It's 2 a.m., long way to go. It's dark all over, moon starting to glow. Gotta stay awake, no matter what I do. Wanna see my girl when the night is through. I'm driving on.
And that's from the band Foghat joining us this morning.
Scott Holt, the lead singer.
How long have you been with the group, Scott?
I joined the band 2 years ago.
And what brought you to Foghat?
I've been friends with Roger since about 2014. We've been co-writing partners and just friends. And I helped him out with Under the Influence, which was their last studio album. And just stayed in the camp and kind of was a facilitator, just co-wrote songs with them and stuff. And when their lead singer decided to retire, a couple of years ago, I was actually at their studio working on this record that we've put out now. And it was just a natural evolution for me to join the band.
Give me a little bit about your career going back, who you've been with.
I started out playing guitar when I was 18. When I was 19, I joined Buddy Guy, and I played with him for 10 years. Then I had a solo career, put out 7 solo albums on my own, and then joined Foghat. Buddy Guy is definitely more towards blues. He's a legendary blues man from Chicago, multi-Grammy winning guitar player, huge influence on blues rock guitar players. So, yeah, he's definitely the blues.
Tell me the connection between blues and Foghat, which is, I guess, pretty much known as a classic rock band.
Well, I mean, Foghat, you know, they started their career basically drawing from the blues catalog. I mean, one of their first big hits was I Just Want to Make Love to You, which was a single by Muddy Waters that was written by Willie Dixon. They've done songs by Chuck Berry, who was also a Chess recording artist. They did a song called Maybelline. They've got a long history of the blues running through what they do, but they drew from all American music. I mean, they've played, you know, rockabilly stuff. They've played country stuff. You know, it all kind of funnels through the same thing, and it all comes back to being American music. These are the styles of music that were developed here in America.
So the album, which just was released on November 10th, is called Sonic Mojo. That has already gotten some pretty good acclaim, right? One of the best albums of 2023?
Thank you for saying that. I'm proud of that. We debuted the record at number one on the Billboard chart, which I think is the first number one that Foghat's ever had. It stayed on the charts for 4 weeks. It may still be on the charts. I'm not sure. But it's been getting good reviews, and we're real proud of it. We worked hard on it, and we were really excited for everybody to hear it. You know, hopefully they're connecting with it and digging it.
As I've listened to music on the album, I absolutely hear a lot of different influences. Blues and country, for sure, are present in a number of the songs.
Right, right. That's you know, I almost said it was intentional, but it's not really intentional. It's just the way we approach music. It's not, we don't, at least I personally don't listen to music as genre specific. You know, I don't sit down and go, okay, I'm listening to a blues record or I'm listening to a country record. When I write a song, I don't say, oh, I'm writing a country song or I'm writing a jazz tune. It all comes from the same place, the same source, and it comes with the same intention. So, you know, you write the music, you record the music, you know, then you let somebody else tell you what it is.
Tell me about your own career a little bit. When you were you said 7 years out solo?
Yeah, I was, I did 7 albums. I was out probably about 15 years solo, but I did 7 records in that time.
How would you characterize, if there's a genre that you could attribute to those recordings?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess if I had to isolate it down to a genre, I would say it's mostly blues, because that's kind of my background, where I come from. The blues is, you know, that's where I started. So that's what I know the best. That's kind of my wheelhouse. So my records were a reflection of that.
I've always loved the blues and jazz in particular. And I don't know if you recognize this name, but I used to go to, when I was a kid, I don't know why my mother let me do this, but I was in Greenwich Village 2, 3, 4 nights a week. I went to listen to the music, and I remember going to the Gaslight in the Village, seeing a legendary Mississippi Delta blues singer, Son House, and
Oh, yeah.
One of the most remarkable performers. He was well in his 80s at that point, but to have had the experience of witnessing him on stage was really witnessing a piece of blues history, I think.
Yeah, I'm a big Son House fan. I didn't get a chance to see him before he passed away, but he did a song called Death Letter Blues, which is one of my favorite songs, so I'm a big Son House fan.
Blues was different in those days. I mean, these guys, to produce the music that they did and from where they did it in Mississippi in the Deep South, that was a different era with a lot of danger that was associated with their being able to produce some of this stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're talking about a black man in the South in the 30s and 40s and 50s, then yeah, it was tremendously a lot more danger. But, you know, I mean, the mechanics of being a musician, I don't know that they've really changed that much. You know, technology changes, but the mechanics of getting from A to B are the same. The way we make our music is basically the same. And the music just, it kind of just evolves and flows. I mean, they're, you know, I don't know that anybody's recording music today that sounds like Son House, but at the same time, if there was a magic combination that made Son House live today, I don't know that he would be making music that sounds like it did when he was doing it back in the 40s.
How much has digital influenced the industry?
Definitely impacted it. It's definitely made making records a lot easier, and which is one reason why you get just this influx of new releases from people, because basically anybody with a laptop can make an album. So the digital side of things, you know, technology is always a double-edged sword. You know, the thing that helps us and makes it easier for us to work is also the thing that can, you know, cause problems. So you don't have to look any further than social media to realize that. But the digital impact on music is, you know, it's probably everlasting at this point.
When did you first become aware of Foghat? And how would you describe 50 some odd years that they've been around? How has the how has the band changed along the way?
You know, they've evolved, but they've also stayed true to their roots. I mean, you know, the record that we just put out is a testament to that fact. It's a full circle record. I mean, you know, their first record had a Willie Dixon Penn song on it. This record's got a Willie Dixon song on it. You know, their first record, they were just coming out of Savoy Brown and playing in a band with Kim Simmons. This record's got three songs that we co-wrote with Kim on. So before he passed away. So it's really a full circle record showing that this band, you know, continues, and we're still working just as hard as ever and playing just as energetically as ever and with as much enthusiasm and integrity. And I don't think the band has completely changed and hasn't changed at all, if you ask me.
Roger was there at the beginning. Are there any others in the band who have been there at the beginning?
No, unfortunately, the rest of the guys in the band have passed away, except for Tony Stevens, the original bass player. He's still alive. I've never met him, but he's still with us. But yeah, the Dave Peverett and Rod Price both passed away.
How have other people come to the band? I presume over the years that the band members have changed, with the exception of Roger, over the years. Am I correct in that? And also, how are people drawn to this band?
Well, I mean, you know, a band in a lot of ways is like a car. You know, if your carburetor goes out, you got to put a new carburetor in. Now, your car may not run the same, it may not sound the same, but it's still your car and it's still going forward. And in a band, when you unplug one member and plug somebody else into that role, you're going to get a different set of results. And I think that through the years, the different people that have passed through the band have put their fingerprints on it, contributed to it, but they haven't really, you know, done anything to negate the fact that this is Roger Earl's band. You know, it starts with the drums, and the rhythm section is the key. Just like with any great rock and roll band, the rhythm section is the real source of the band. You look at any rock band that's ever been successful in history, the drummer is the driving force, and in this band, it's definitely the case.
And I think that goes to a lot of music. I think in a lot of jazz, it's the drummer that is a driving force as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, John Coltrane was great, but you know, Elvin Jones laid the groundwork for him to be able to sail, you know, and that's you have to acknowledge that.
Scott, tell me a little bit about your growing up. What whether there was a music influence in your household, and what drew you to the guitar?
You know, growing up, my parents had a pretty diverse record collection that they let me play with, so I listened to a lot of different types of music growing up. Didn't really give any notion to playing an instrument until I was 18 and I heard Jimi Hendrix. And I ran home and begged my parents for a guitar, which they graciously gave me, and immediately set out to start trying to be Jimi Hendrix, and, you know, realized that was a pretty lofty goal after a while. And I decided I would be content just to practice as hard as I could and get as good as I could on the guitar and, you know, see what happened. Still wasn't thinking that it would turn into a profession. And then my dad took me to see Buddy Guy and Junior Wells in Florida at a club, and seeing Buddy on stage and what he did made me want to be a musician. I knew that's what I wanted to do. That was the thing that was that my art was responding to. And so I met Buddy that night, and he invited me to his hotel the next day and gave me a guitar lesson. We spent about 4 hours together just sitting across from each other playing guitars. And then I went away for a year and practiced a little harder. And he called me up a year later and said, "Changing my band, do you want to join the band?" And I said, "Sure." So I got a passport, a one-way ticket to Chicago, and flew to Chicago. He picked me up at the airport and took me home and made dinner for me, and then took me down to his club. And I got in a van with a bunch of guys I'd never met, and we headed to Canada, the first gig. So that was my introduction into the blues.
Where were you brought up?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Obviously, it's tremendous country influence there, but I guess it's all music that's influenced in Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville's a pretty diverse scene, and always has been. I mean, country gets the limelight because it's the home of country music. You got the Grand Ole Opry and the Ryman Auditorium, and you know, all the great country records, a lot of them came out of here, the ones that didn't come out of California. It's got a strong country base, but there's a great rock scene here. There's a great blues scene here. And you know, living where I live, you know, I'm 45 miles south of Nashville, actually, 2 hours east of Memphis, about 6 hours north of New Orleans. So I'm right in the middle of where all the music comes from, basically.
Do you write some of the music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been writing pretty much since I started. I co-wrote some of the songs on Under the Influence. I co-wrote all the original songs on this new record. Yeah, so I do write.
Tell me about that process. When you sit down to write a song, what goes through your mind and what motivates you? Is it I remember you go back a number of years and you go to folk groups like Peter, Paul, and Mary, and it was all about different causes. Are songs now predicated on that, or are they just with the intent of making good music that people enjoy, and instead of thinking also about a message?
I think you have all of that. It just depends on the artist. I mean, me personally, for starters, I don't sit down to write a song, because if I did that, it would be impossible. I have to wait for the inspiration to hit. You know, I'll be playing my guitar, or I'll be driving down the road and a lyric will pop in my head and that'll start me going, or I'll play a chord progression on my guitar and that'll start me going. And then for me, it's about, you know, the story of the song, not so much a message. You know, I don't believe God put me on this planet to preach to people, but, you know, trying to relate to people and trying to write something that somebody else can identify with. I think that's, for me, that's the key to my writing, is trying to write something that's relatable. You know, a song about love, or a song about loss, or, you know, happiness or whatever. And then, you know, that just kind of comes naturally. And you just, you just wait for that inspiration, and you catch it when it flies by and hope that you can hang on long enough to write the song.
God, I want to change direction ever so slightly and talk about live performances. Is Foghat out performing a lot?
We are. We that's pretty much the mechanism of this band. I mean, we're a live band, so we hit the road in January, and we'll be touring all year long, and we just we love it. That's what we live for. It's all about the music.
Yeah, I was looking at your schedule. If I'm correct, I think in March or so, you're up in Massachusetts someplace, not all that far from us.
I'll take your word for that.
Well, if not, then schedule. Tell me about your audiences. Are these Foghat fans that go way back? Are they an older audience, or are you attracting younger people?
The Foghat audience that I see every night is so diverse. It's Foghat fans from the beginning, but it's also their kids, their grandkids, you know, men, women. It's everybody, and I'm real proud of that, and happy for that, because, you know, as a musician and an entertainer, you want an opportunity to entertain as many people as you can. And we have that with this band. I mean, the Foghat audience is a diverse and loyal group of people.
How much energy do you take from your audience?
All of it, all we can get. we're a band that you know, we hit the stage running. We can't wait to play, so we're all amped up when we get on stage. And you know, whatever the audience gives us, we're trying to give that right back to them. I tell the audience every night, you know, if you had a good time tonight, I promise you we had more fun than you did. And that's true, because we're up there having a ball. If you see a band where the guys in the band don't get along or don't really enjoy what they're doing, you can tell that. And when you see a band where the guys genuinely like each other and are having fun, you can tell that too. In this band especially, you know, we're four guys that love each other. I mean, we're, you know, on our off nights, we go to dinner together. I mean, we hang out together. We don't, you know, I've been in bands where as soon as you hit the hotel lobby, everybody goes to their room and you never see anybody until the show. And that's not this band at all. I mean, we're all together all the time, and we're having a ball, and it translates to the stage for sure.
I want to take you back a little bit to your days with Buddy Guy and tell me what it was like with Buddy Guy and whether you had that same kind of camaraderie.
I did with Buddy. I mean, he and I, we had a little routine where we would go to lunch every day when we were on the road. And, you know, we got really close. I value his friendship, and he's always been a great mentor to me. But, you know, back in those days, I was a green kid and I didn't know anything. And I went on the road and, you know, didn't know how to check into a hotel or make a long distance call or, you know, order Chinese food. So I had to learn all that, and Buddy's the one that taught me all that stuff. And you know, it was a real learning curve. The 10 years that I spent with him were pretty much the reason why I do everything I do now. So,
and why did you guys part, or why did you leave Buddy?
I had started, well, when I got with Buddy, he always would say things like, well, when you get your own band, or when you do your own thing, you know, it was always an understood thing that I wasn't going to be there forever. Cause I was young and I wanted, you know, I did want to have my own band and I wanted to do other things. So after about 10 years, I had released my second, record, and it was for a label that was wanting to promote the record and wanting me to go on tour to support it. And it was really hard to figure out a way to do that and tour with Buddy, cause Buddy tours pretty hard. I mean, even to this day, he still tours hard, but we were, you know, doing 250 dates probably at that point.
Wow.
And so it just became a point where it wasn't going to work. And I just called Buddy and said, man, I think it's time to move on. And he said, absolutely. He said, you know, go get them, and I'm here if you need me. And that's the relationship we've had ever since. If I got a question, I call him up. And, you know, we talk about stuff. And it's just a really good friendship, and I'm grateful for it.
When you toured with your own band, what was the configuration of that band?
I started out with a three-piece. Then we added a keyboard player, so we became a four-piece for a while, and then went back to a three-piece. The three-piece for me was a leaner situation, because a lot of the stuff I was doing was improvisational. You know, I was coming from the Buddy Guy band where it was all improv, and so to be able to make those corners playing, you know, improv music, it was easier as a three-piece. So there was a long stretch where it was just me and a drummer and a bass player.
In today's band, is there much improv?
To a degree there is. You know, there's certain songs that you know, you don't really have a lot of room to move on, because they're, you know, people want to hear Slow Ride played like they remember it from, the 8-track in their Camaro back in 1978 or whatever. So you don't want to get too far away from the script on that one. But anywhere there's a nook or a cranny where I can do my own thing on it, I take that opportunity, and they're very patient and gracious with me and let me get away with what I consider to be murder, but, you know.
And what's the configuration of Foghat now?
The same as always been. Bass drums, two guitars. I do most of the lead singing, but Rodney O'Quinn, our bassist, sings lead on some songs. We have our drum tech, Eddie LaFave, who contributes some percussion from the side of the stage. So, but it's basically a four-piece rock band like it's always been.
The band, of course, over the years has done very well. 8 gold records, a platinum record, a double platinum record. That's a great history, and I presume it has developed a pretty strong following.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you can't get platinum records without somebody liking them. You know, somebody's got to buy them. But like I was saying before, the Foghat audience is a loyal audience, diverse audience, passionate. You know, sometimes you, especially on social media, you get a little pushback sometimes. You know, people that wish Dave was still alive, which I wish Dave was still alive. You know, I mean, it would be great to go see the original configuration of Foghat, but it's not possible because the guys are passed on. So, you know, what we do as a band is we maintain that same attitude and that same integrity and try to honor the memory of Dave and Rod while at the same time keeping the band moving forward with Roger, because, you know, Roger's still kicking. He's got the energy of a teenager, and, you know, we're still a viable band that creates new music.
Scott, are you still doing other things on your own, or is it all just about Foghat now?
You know, I have the option of doing whatever I want, but and I've done a couple of gigs here and there, but for the most part, I'm really devoted to this band. I mean, I'm proud to be the lead singer of Foghat, and I'm proud to be contributing what I can to this band and to this cause, and so I kind of focus on that for the now.
What would you say to people who are coming to Foghat for the very first time? What can they expect?
You're going to have a good time. You're going to hear the songs that you want to hear. You're going to get some surprises. You're going to laugh. You're going to enjoy yourself. You're going to be permitted to dance if that's what you want to do. And when you leave, my goal is for you to be saying, we've got to come back and see this band again. And that's the whole thing. It's you know, we're entertainers. You know, that's whatever it takes to entertain you, that's what we're going to do.
What's the most unusual place you've performed?
The most unusual place. Well, we played a furniture store a couple of weeks ago. That was pretty strange, but it turned out to be pretty fun too. So I was surprised by that. But, you know, I mean, as a musician, you know, I've been doing this now for a long time. And so you get to see everything. I've played some huge places to massive crowds. I've played some little bitty places to little bitty crowds. It's just that diversity of traveling around the world and all the different looks you get. I think that's, you know, I wish everybody had a passport and could travel, you know, because I think that's important for us as a community, you know, to experience other things, see other people, see other cultures, get ideas about what somebody else is thinking, and see it in real time instead of having it fed to you by the computer.
Interesting observation. Tell me, if you take a look collectively at the places that you've seen, the people that you've met, what are the lessons that you've learned?
Well, I remember one time early on when I was with Buddy, we were in France, and I was walking around. We were in Paris, and I was walking around, not really going anywhere. I took a side street, and I'm walking behind this guy, and he's got a loaf of bread under his arm, and he's headed home. And it's, you know, in the afternoon, and, you know, in my head, I'm saying, well, this guy just got off work, and his wife asked him to pick up some bread on his way home for supper, and that's exactly what happens where I come from. And, you know, when I go to Chicago, I see people and they're doing the exact same thing. And when I'm in Spain, I see people doing the exact same thing. It made me realize how small the world is, and how, as much as, you know, people love to point out how different everybody is, our similarities are way more frequent than our differences. And it just gave me a whole different perspective on us.
I talk about that a lot, Scott, how in this In this crazy world that we're in with so many divisions and so many crazy influences from perhaps social media, some people in the media, and I've been in journalism for years, but people in the media who lost sight of what their mission is, which is to report the news, not to commentate on it, that when it comes down to everything, we all have the same basic needs. We all have the same basic things as human beings, whether we're from Iceland or whether we're from wherever. And it's a great perspective. Great perspective. I wish we could spread that word more and more and more. I think we really desperately need it.
Well, the benefit to being a musician and being with a band like Foghat is, you know, you do get the opportunity to be interviewed, and you get the opportunity to talk to magazines or to talk on the radio. And I always try to make that point that, you know, we're all here together and we're all the same. And you know, that's, you know, everybody's got to do their part. As a musician, I do mine by entertaining people and trying to make them happy. Hopefully harder to hate when you're happy.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. You know, we've only got a few minutes left. And what I wanted to ask you, is there anything else that you want to add? And then what I want to do is I want to come out, let people listen to some of the music as we come out. But is there anything, Scott, that we've missed that you'd like to add and tell the folks?
I don't think so. I think, you know, if you see us coming to somewhere near you, come out and see us. Go on foghat.com, and you can see our tour dates. You can also pick up the new record, and you can communicate with us on there. You know, if you've got something you want to ask us or talk to us about, we've got a way for you to communicate with us through the website. So that would be it. I would rather you spend the rest of this time playing the new record so people can hear some of it.
Yeah, and so I can hear. I love the music. I think it's a great record. It's called Sonic Mojo. And Scott, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Let's listen to some music.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia, California, on my mind. Straddle that Greyhound Road and then the Raleigh and on across Carolina. Had a boat of trouble that turned into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, that hound broke down and they left us all stranded in downtown Birmingham. Right away, I bought me a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham and smoking into New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. There are people there who care a little about me and they won't let the poor boy down. Give it
Norfolk, Virginia time, 1-4-10-09. Tell the folks back home, this is the promised land calling, and the poor boys on the line. Tell the folks back home, this is the promised land calling.